Welcome back. I say back because this is going to be episode 2 of our podcast, Points Per Reflection. Before, I am Rick. I am here with Tim, and we have some player work here today for you. We're going to work on some player talk. We're not going to hit all the players you want to talk about. We're just going to hit a few, but the method is going to be the focus. The method of what we do and how we do it and what we look at when we are talking about these players and trying to figure out their value for fantasy football. So something that Tim and I wanted to express was that we are just your regular guys who have done this for a long time. Between the two of us, we have, if you count both of our decades of experience, about 40 years experience in this, and maybe a little over. And we're just trying to win, and we're trying to help you win, and we're using our methods to help you do that. And if you love it, that's awesome. We want to be here with you. If you question it, that's awesome. We want to be here with you. If you hate it, that's awesome. We want to be here with you. What we want from you is participation. So we're going to be on X, and we're going to be mixing it up in the comments. We're going to be posting things that you might find controversial. We're going to be working through stuff. And we want to show that regardless of if you agree or not with our opinions are well thought. They're not garbage, and we've worked on them and we've processed them and we've gotten to a point where we believe in them. And so that kind of starts today as we talk a little bit about Tim's process with evaluating players and working on how to assess players in the element of fantasy football. So without further ado, that is where we're headed today, and we're going to get started on that. So, Tim, I just have a question for you real quick. Like, when should you start looking into this stuff? What is your process?
It's changed over the years, right? So I think when I first started playing fantasy football, I went to ESPN. I went to all of your major networks. I looked for cheat sheets and player rankings and tried to identify players that, first off, I liked. And then it was many years later for me to identify, I don't need to worry about following someone else's work if I can understand what are the metrics that they're using to identify players of value for fantasy football. Most of the numbers that we're going to be looking at today, all this work started back in early June for me specifically. Being able to look at the 2024 fantasy stats at a PPR system ranks the players in terms of their results, and not really looking at anything other than final metrics. The work for me began back in early June this year. I was pulling all the numbers from last year's fantasy football results based on points per game and total points. So when you look at the top players, regardless of how they got there at the running back position, who had the most points, we went and we ranked those based on that alone. Then I was able to pull in all of the small data points, all of those categories that make up the points in fantasy football for running backs. You're talking about not the carries, don't matter as much, but after attempts, you go, what's the yardage? How many touchdowns? And for our metrics, also looking at who is catching passes, what are they doing with those passes, and then how many points are they getting at the end of the year that gets them that, hey, I'm the top of this position. So I did that for every single player that we would find to be important, all the way through probably the top 48 wide receivers, the top 48 running backs, the top 24 tight ends, and the top 24 quarterbacks. Being able to look at the total points and then decompose how they got those points was very interesting, I did not realize, for instance, that Brian Thomas Jr. finished as high as he did. When I finished watching football and playoffs and regular sport, then coming back to look at it from a fantasy football point of view, that was eye-opening for me. And I said, I need to be able to look at this a little bit deeper and figure out where he started to really pick up. So when we look at some of these player profiles, what I'm thinking first is, how important is this player to their offense in real life? What is the volume that that player is going to get? Then I'm looking back to things like year-to-year stats. Is this happening just once, or is this multiple times over the course of their career that they've been able to hit certain components? Like, everyone knows Alvin Kamara. Why is he valuable? He catches passes. He's been doing it for his whole career. So, being able to identify certain important data points for each player allows us to have a better idea of what is the value that we can predict, hopefully, on a probability model for the next season.
Because the point is points, right? The point in fantasy football is points. So that's a logical place to start. And I think everyone starts there. The problem is everyone starts there and a lot of people end there. There's like, oh, this person got a lot of points. But we need to make sure that we're balancing that against that they can sustain getting a lot of points year after year or into the next year. And I think that's why it's really important to consider player history and reasonable opportunities for the upcoming season of points. And that helps us better predict. So, you look at a guy who got, 300 points last year and you think, oh, they got 300 points last year. It's a better exercise to dig into how he got those points to understand if that's repeatable. Because you can't take that stat in a vacuum and assume that you can copy and paste it to every other season. So I think that that's really important. And I think that the method that you break it down makes a lot of sense. It's hierarchical, right? Like you're starting at the top with, okay, these are the points. Yeah, that's where everyone wants to start. But then breaking down into the minutiae and all the different factors that play into those points, injuries, games missed, overall finishes, high percentage scoring games where like what I mean by that is high percentage possibilities against defenses, right? Defenses that are maybe a little worse and they had this schedule, right? All this stuff plays into the overall analysis and we have to take it from one year and try to estimate the next year based on this data. So that's why the breakdown is so important. So Tim, unless you have more to say about that, we're going to get into some player talk. What do you think?
Well, I guess one last point I'd like to make, and I'll make a really prevalent example right now. One of the first players that I really started to want to look at the stats for, not just last year, but his full career, was Kenneth Walker III. And I bring that name up because when you look at all of the notes that I took in terms of the total points for 2024-25 in a PPR setting, he might not have had a large number of total points because he didn't play all year. He only played 11 games. He only had 181 fantasy points on the year, which is a far cry from guys like Barkley, who had 355. But his points per game was 16 and a half. Now, 16 and a half points per game, I will take that. We just
Yes.
want more. We just want more games in the season from him.
If it's
But
over 15, money.
Looking at what he's able to do, I really wanted to dig into, why are people off of him? What is the upside for this season? And he's a great example because he's a very polarizing player right now, Rick. Last year, despite missing a bunch of games, he still had 46 receptions on 53 targets for 300 yards and a touchdown. So he's getting more work through the air. And then he had 153 carries, 573 yards. He had more explosive plays than almost anyone else in the league in about 60% of the games of everyone else in the league. He also had a bunch of negative yards. I don't think that's his fault, though. I think that's more of your offensive line and your offensive scheme from last year. You have a new offensive coordinator that's supposed to be bringing in more of a zone hammer scheme, which fits Walker's profile. So Again, here's a guy who didn't finish last year. People are probably off of him. He has to share with Zach Charbonnet, who outscored him last year because he played more games. But this is a guy who he's coming into a contract year. When you add up all those different points that I just made, he's a guy to get excited about. The only thing that you have to be concerned about is the same thing you have to be concerned about with guys like Christian McCaffrey, with that high ceiling is a real low floor only because of injury.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, right? You ask, why are people down on Kenneth Walker? And it probably is because of injury, right? That's the only reason you could see, because the stats are good. So people who don't dig into the stats are going to say, ah, he's injured. But I have news for everyone here. If any one of you can guarantee me that Bijan Robinson will play 17 games this season, I want you to email us at pointsperreflection@gmail.com or hit us up on X at ppreflection and tell me exactly why you can guarantee us he's going to play 17 games. Because any workhorse running back faces the risk of injury. Some guys are smaller. Yeah, I get it. Derrick Henry's a monster. I get it. But any bell cow workhorse back who's getting the ball a ton, these are the guys with tread on the tires that gets burnt out during the season. Their tread gets burnt out because they are running. The ball doesn't travel through the air 20 yards to them. If they get 20 yards, they hoofed it. They did it on the ground. And so, yeah, they wear down. So with Kenneth Walker, all right, are we going to sit here and constantly hold his past injuries against him? Or are we just going to accept that a guy who has a lot of volume or that has a lot of chances to make points for us, fantasy football points, also has a higher probability of getting injured? And I think that that's something we have to look at. So we had said before we get into players, but Kenneth Walker actually ended up being a great bridge to just jump into players. So let's just keep up with that. And if you have anything else about Kenneth, let's talk about it. If not, let's move on and talk about some other guys, like maybe another guy who we talk about injury, and that's Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, he was the second guy that I wanted to talk about because he's been a stud for so long. We sometimes get really caught up in recency bias. And so if again, going back to something that we spoke about in our first podcast, if you had Christian McCaffrey 2 years ago, you were elated with him. And then if you redrafted him last year, now he's not anyone you're going to touch because of what happened last year.
I'm still seeing that in my nightmares.
If you look at what he's done in his career, starting in Carolina is just a monster, but he had a couple years where he got banged up. He missed a bunch of games. And when I say a bunch of games, we're talking more than two-thirds of a season. So
Yeah.
you're either going to get full-on Christian McCaffrey, where you know that the ceiling is RB1, right? Definitely top five. But you
Absolutely.
also have a larger probability this year of going, hey, like he's been injured three different seasons. That's taken him out for a long time for each season. And he's getting long in the tooth for fantasy football. I'm just staying away from it. I do these player profiles with the lens of trying to find the positive. Again, we can't account for things like injury. We can't account for things like getting traded in the middle of the year or some dude just coming up and outperforming you. We go with at draft time with what we got. And so for me, I said, I really like the idea of what would Christian McCaffrey's stats look like if he could get 80% of his three best seasons. And you just work with the numbers, right? You go online, that anyone can do this. We're just simple guys. You go online, you find a couple of these years, you start writing down the stats of those years as it applies to fantasy football. So you're looking at your carries, your yards, your touchdowns, how many fumbles, maybe if you want to look at things like that. And then also the pass catching. Christian McCaffrey's had a year where he's had 100 catches. That is not a normal thing. And so if we think about all of that math, what I came up with was that Christian McCaffrey, if we project that to a healthy 2025 and some of these other things that we are seeing in real life for the 49ers, which is not a lot of pass catchers available at this point, a schedule that on paper looks very favorable for that team, and then you know that he's a volume back, If he plays 15 games and he doesn't get the 17 games, he still probably scores in the top five. He would have had over 330 fantasy football points coming into this year if we look at 80% of his three best seasons. Again, we're not going to spend time on the what ifs and the injuries and the lost seasons. I'm only looking at what is he going to offer me and what is the with the top shelf. That's a top five running back last year in 2024.
Yes. So CMC is a monster when he's on the field, and I don't think anyone will doubt that. So we've talked about a couple running backs here, but one of the players that you profiled kind of early on was Devon Achane, and I was wondering if we could give some talk about him because he's kind of a polarizing back despite his talent.
Absolutely. When I started compiling all of this data, one of the first thoughts I had was who are players who have some sort of intrigue in the fantasy football world and why is that? So it wasn't so much like I need to dig into numbers of all these different players. It was really about who are interesting players on specific offenses that are important to fantasy football as much as they are to the real world, and sometimes even more in terms of being interesting. He was a real interesting player for me because he doesn't have a big sample size. You know, he's entering his third season, right? And so I totally forgot until I started looking at the numbers why he jumped on people's radar as a rookie. Do you remember why that was, Rick?
You're testing me here. There was an injury, I think, and then he had to cover for injury.
Yeah, he was behind, like, I think it was Raheem Mostert, and he wasn't supposed to be a starting running back,
He
but he
blasted
was
off, right?
highly effective.
Now it's all coming back to me. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So he only played 11 games as a rookie, but he had 103 attempts and over 800, I think exactly 800 yards. So if you think about that, his yards per carry was much, much higher than the league average. So that was a big reason. He also had eight touchdowns on the ground in 11 games, which is really above average.
It's almost a touchdown a game, right? So, yeah.
Right. Now, we didn't see him as much of a pass catcher as a rookie. He had 27 catches, three touchdowns. So in 11 games, that's not a huge amount. But when you fast forward to what we saw last year, there was a major difference in terms of how he is utilized, probably because of the Tua injury, to be honest. Not having him for a while, he had fewer touchdowns on the ground. He was much, much less effective. That was not a really strong offensive line, but he was still, I'm not going to say quarterback proof because that's not really the right concept, but as
Not for a running
a
back, especially.
pass catching running back, being able to utilize Achane as a receiver, he led the league in receptions last year. So he took that crown away from Kamara. 78 catches on 87 targets is pretty impressive. 592 yards, six touchdowns. So still got massive points without being a 1,000-yard rusher. It was very interesting to just dig and see what really vaulted him into an area where we look at this and say, hey, carries a lot of risk compared to some of the other names up in the first two rounds, but the upside is very, very intriguing. It's very juicy.
So, hey, a couple extra points to add. Three touchdowns as a receiver back in that rookie year, which does put him at a touchdown a game on average, right? So it's 11 games, 11 touchdowns. I don't know back then if he did it one game apiece. He might have gotten two in a game, but that's the average, right? He's won a game. So that's pretty nice. And then fun fact about his 2024 receiving numbers, that 592 is more receiving yards than any of the 2019 Philadelphia Eagles receivers. Carson Wentz in 2019 passed for over 4,000 yards, and none of his receivers had over 500 yards receiving. So I think
That's
there's
absolutely wild.
just an
That's
interesting fun fact that keeps getting spread around the fantasy community. Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, and I think Miles Sanders are the three who had over 500 yards with Carson Wentz in 2019. Anyways, this isn't about 2019 and this isn't about Carson Wentz. So I just wanted to point that out because he had 592 yards, Achane did last year as a receiver.
And when we think about that and go, okay, so all these numbers, Tim, these are from 2 years ago, last year. Why is it important this year? It gives us a nice baseline of an average of what these players are able to do We've seen it. And now the other side of the fun part of fantasy football for a lot of us is being able to get excited about what are the possibilities for these players. If I'm really interested in having a Devon Achane on my team, I have to be, where I'm gonna use the word educated, right? I have to be educated in what are the pros and cons of this player. What is the upside? What is the absolute, they use the term ceiling for this player, and how can he get there? What makes the most sense realistically? And right now, there's two parts of what he's already shown us, right? In his rookie season, what he showed us was if he has some offensive line support, he can move with the ball, right? His yards per carry, they were over 7 yards per carry. Last year, what he showed us was I don't need that to be successful in the fantasy world. Our team might not do so well. I might not do as well on the ground, which was the case, but my pass catching ability is something that's A, in real life, going to keep him on the field, give him more volume, and hopefully give him opportunities to have those explosive plays, which with a guy for his speed, that's again, I'm going to use the word juicy. I don't even know why that's just popping in my head, but it makes it more appetizing for you to say, that's a guy I'm really interested in. He might not be a clear-cut hero running back, right? Going back to a previous discussion, but he is someone who carries a lot of value and ceiling for the area of the draft that I might find him in.
And as a fantasy football person, I just want to point out, because people can't see us right now on the podcast, but like when you started talking about his ceiling and all that, your eyes lit up and you were smiling. And I'm like, I love that about fantasy football, right? When we really dig in, and you called it juicy, right? When we really dig into some of these numbers, if we love this game, if we love trying to win this game, we are all about this stuff. It's like a big fat steak in front of us and we're just digging our teeth in, right? So I totally understand using the term juicy. And this is the kind of excitement that I want everyone listening to have when they're going through this stuff, because it makes it more entertaining and it makes you more willing to do the work. The work isn't going to get done if you hate it. The work isn't going to get done if it's tedious to you. The work is going to get done if you love this sport, love digging into the numbers, and love playing fantasy football. So we talked about a couple running backs. Let's move on and talk about a tight end. Let's go over to someone who's very interesting to me, and that is Hunter Henry.
Hunter Henry, if we think about his career, he started with the Chargers, and we started with the Chargers actually not in Los Angeles, but back in San Diego. So he had a year as a rookie, drafted by San Diego, then got switched over to Los Angeles, and then he had a year that he almost lost like the entire season, if I remember right. So being at this stage of his career. Now we're looking at his 10th year, right? He's had 9 years. In those 9 years as a football player in the NFL, he's got 40 touchdowns, okay? And last year was not a great year for him statistically. So if you only clip what he was able to do last year, a lot of people are probably not going to be rushing to go get the sleeper Hunter Henry here. But if you look at a few compact pieces of information, you might start thinking, well, the possibilities on that probability scale that we've been talking about, it kind of creeps up there. So last year, he had 11 of his 16 games with Drake May. May didn't really come onto the scene. He didn't become the starter until week six. And after that, who was his go-to target? It was Henry. He had 50 catches, 70 targets. Of the 674 yards he had all season, 494 came from Drake May. So that's over 70% of his yards in 11 games. Another really important piece of information really isn't the data of what happened historically year to year for him. But if we go back to 2021, Josh McDaniels was the offensive coordinator. Hunter Henry was actually kind of new to the Patriots at that point, but he had his very best season in terms of touchdown receptions. He had nine years, 40 touchdowns, and in 1 year in 2021, he had nine of those 40 touchdowns under the direction of McDaniels. These are all little puzzle pieces that, again, might not equate immediately to points, but again, if we're thinking about players that might be sleepers, guys, if you're not going to go and get those top three tight ends, and you're not going to look and you're going to maybe miss out on a guy like David Njoku in the middle rounds, and you're just kind of going, ooh, I'm going to get two of them. Henry might be one of those two guys that really looks good to you.
Yeah, he fits that build really well, I think. I love that dig about Drake May taking over and then his numbers increasing. That is an interesting statistic, and I think that that's an interesting statistic coinciding with that McDaniels offensive coordinator statistic. It's like, uh-oh, the storm is brewing again for Hunter Henry, right? And he might pull out. That's super interesting. Obviously it's a different year. We can't expect the exact same thing, but like we said before, we're taking history and combining it with potential, and there we have history matching potential.
Yeah, and again, we know that in New England they signed Stephon Diggs, they still have Pop Douglas, they drafted Kyle Williams. You got a new offense going at this point in terms of players. But again, when we think about, and I think about things like red zone targets, last year in 11 games, Hunter Henry had more red zone targets than he had 2 years prior for the whole slate of a season. And in the 11 games, he averaged 4.5 catches on 6.4 targets. Not having a whole lot of red zone efficiency, but having the options. If it didn't hit last year, we talk about regression to the mean. He only had two touchdowns last year, and only one of those two touchdowns was from Drake May. But if you think about the volume of targets that he's receiving from Drake May and what potentially could happen next year, where do you think he's going to have the most high efficient opportunities to get some targets? I would assume it might be red zone.
Yeah, especially with that career high 9 touchdowns, right, in the previous McDaniels system. Maybe we're thinking the same things there from that year. It's interesting that quarterback thing can work for and against players, and I'm not going to stick on this too long, but I think it was interesting that worked against a very popular receiver this year, Brian Thomas Jr. There's some people out there who are saying, well, Mac Jones was the one who really pumped up BTJ. He was the one. And we have Trevor Lawrence starting the year this year, and he's going to be the quarterback throwing it. So I just think that's interesting that that point can work for or against, depending on if the person's getting the targets or not with a certain quarterback,
That's
right?
absolutely right.
For the record, I don't think that BTJ's talent is going to be eclipsed by the fact that Trevor Lawrence is throwing him the ball. I still think he's a great pick. I think that that's just a lot of speculation with no real juice to it, but I could be wrong. We'll find out when the season starts, and that's some of the fun of this game.
All right, another player profile stud that I was kind of looking into is a well-known player, polarizing for a number of years. Tight end, there's clearly three at the top, right? Bowers and McBride, they're young guys. They're gonna demand a whole lot of target share within those offenses. And then people are really sleeping on George Kittle, even though he's just the third tight end to go off the board in all these redrafts this year. A lot of people tend to think that George Kittle maybe isn't the best option for tight end, specifically in a PPR setting, because he hasn't gotten more than 100 targets in a number of years. I know that at least looking back the last 3 seasons, he's been under 100 targets every year. And so if you're getting less than 100 targets and you look at the guys who are above him, they're getting over 100 catches. So it doesn't take a genius to kind of look at the difference in terms of what your receptions are going to be, but what he can do with those receptions in that Shanahan offense is su it really is special. This guy right now, and I know that we all love Travis Kelce. Kelce's not the same player as what he was. I think that Kittle, he's a few years younger, he's going to get to that same point, but right now he is set up to absolutely crush. And a lot of that has to do with some of just being one of the guys that's always on the field. He loves to block. That doesn't help us in fantasy football at all, but the fact that he's getting that high snap share also means that he's juiced up and he's ready to go every single play. He's locked in every single play. And so when he does take a 12-yard post route and he gets that ball, he's running the same energy as what he's blocking. Yes, he has that injury history. Yes, he's a little bit older compared to some of the other guys above and below him, right? He's older than Hockenson, he's older than Laporta, he's older than David Njoku. Those are just a couple of guys that are going to go behind him. But again, the efficiency And I've already seen some things where people are disagreeing with this, but it you can't cheat math, right? In the last 3 years, he's got 25 touchdowns. All right. For his career, he's got 45. So he's actually increased his, and again, if we're thinking about old school non-PPR leagues, you're looking for touchdowns, especially from that position, right? And so if we're thinking about what he has to offer, yeah, he's not getting the number of receptions, but he's making up for it in getting the ball in the areas that matter, which is the red zone and the end zone. And so when I look at this six-time Pro Bowler, I mean, they're not going to change how they're using him in San Francisco. When you think about Debo's gone, Ayuk's hurt, he's not going to start the season ready to go. We don't really know what's happening with the Jennings contract stuff. It's real quiet, but San Francisco does not have the best history of transactions and negotiations before a season starts. I can easily see reliance on what do we know in that offense? Pearsall's new. McCaffrey's there. If he's ready to go 100%, like they say, that's fantastic. But the number one pass catcher who's going to be that consistent blanket for Brock Purdy is going to be George Kittle. Last year, 78 receptions on 94 targets, over 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns. Yeah, he was tight end three, but on a points per game basis, he was number one.
And you know what binds a lot of these players we're talking about that we find intriguing, and I didn't even realize the pattern. The pattern is these are all great players who put up good numbers who also happen to have some injuries here and there. So I know that we've talked about Kittle before in the last podcast episode, and we talked about him again, and the thing that comes up again is that brittle Kittle thing, right? And it's like, yeah, I get it, but guys who play hard and guys who get the stats and guys who put the work in have a higher tendency of getting injured. And he plays hard, he plays tough. If you watch his games, the production is there. Touchdowns, touchdowns, touchdowns. When we're talking about tight ends, what separates a tight end? It's either going to be points per reception and a ton of receptions like McBride, or touchdowns. That is what is going to be your separator. And if you have both, even better. We talked about.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no,
Just
jump
two
in.
more real quick points about Kittle. Missed two games last year, but again, going back to my statement before, 16.5 points per game. That was number one in the league, right? So Brock Bowers, yeah, he had more points, he had more receptions overall, played two more games, but when you look at his points per game, 15.5. If Kittle's able to play a full season, if he's able to continue to be one of the focal points of that offense, it's the same kind of thinking that we have for CMC. Same offense, good schedule, not many other options on that offense. And again, you have an offensive-minded head coach. You bring all that together. I like to look at the upside. I'm not going to poo-poo the injury just because of what's happened in recent years. For me, as a fantasy football player, I'm going to look at the numbers. I'm going to look at what's happening now. What is the current reality? And then what is that probability on that scale of, is this going to be something that's possibly a good thing? Or is this something that may be a great thing down the road for him?
Yeah, and we talk about injury and we talk about these players, and really we break down all these data points and we nitpick it. If I'm going to break it down into one simple point, I don't draft scared. I am not drafting scared. I am not drafting saying, oh no, Kittle's going to get injured in week six. You know what's going to happen by the time week six is there? I'm going to grow as a fantasy player in my season. I'm going to know what's out there to pick up. I'm going to see things differently than I saw at my draft. When I'm in my draft, Kittle's the guy that I want above every other tight end except Bowers and McBride, period. And if I can get him at a good price, I'm taking him. I am taking him. I am smiling about it. I'm popping a beer. I'm going to bed. And I will deal with week six when we are closer to week six, because I know until that happens, it didn't happen. And what is going to happen by all estimations when he's on the field is fantasy production, period.
Period.
So, moving on here, let's go back to some running backs real quick. We kind of broke it up with those tight ends and took a little foray into tight ends. Let's go back to running backs. Let's talk about Chase Brown real quick.
There are a lot of people in the fantasy football world who are starting to get real warm on Chase Brown.
Well, yeah, he's a hype train, isn't he?
He certainly is, and with good reason. I mean, if you think about, again, some of the things have to do with math and numbers and historical data and what they did last year and being able to say, well, is it repeatable? And then some of it is also what is happening in real life with this team? What is happening with the offense that this player is on? What have we seen historically in terms of your offensive scheme? Cincinnati's not hard to figure out, right? They haven't changed their MO. It hasn't worked in real life for them as a football team. They're not, they're kind of like chasing everybody every single year, and their defense is terrible, and they could have made the playoffs, but they just didn't last year. I could see them in the playoffs this year. One of the big reasons they'll get there is, again, not their defense, it's their pass game. And
No,
we're
it's certainly
talking
not the
about a
defense.
running back here, right? So this is why people are excited. When I looked at the numbers on Chase Brown, he was amazing once he got full control of that backfield. So if you go back and remember, he was sharing and splitting carries with Zach Moss, and actually they were both doing pretty well until Moss had that injury, right? And pretty, I think, his back and neck area. So once they IR'd him and said, "Hey, you're done for the year. We're gonna hand it off to number 30," he went and did some work. If you look at his overall, including the time with Chase, he averaged almost 16 points per game. Again, that's including time with Chase. His overall total yards, receiving and rushing, he had 1,350 yards, total 11 touchdowns. He finishes RB10. And again, from weeks 9 to 17, he was the full-time starter. He had 38 of his 54 receptions within that amount of time. He averaged 20.6 points per game. He ended up being running back 6. His points per game was higher than Alvin Kamara, higher than Chuba Hubbard. These are also guys who are getting full-time work. Biggest difference, that offense is just clicking, right? You're not going to win games in Cincinnati unless those are points happening, and they're going to throw the ball. Guess what? Joe Burrow in the red zone, he throws the ball a whole bunch. He'll throw it to everybody, and he does, including the running back. So really high on what Chase Brown can offer this year, mostly because we know what we should be able to expect from that offense is not far off of what they've given us the last 2 years. Nothing else has changed in Cincinnati except for the fact that they did not want to go and get any other help at running back like they have in previous years because they don't need it now.
Right. And that is telling, right? What teams say may not always tell you the full story, but what they do will give you clues, right? And they did not go out and find a top-tier running back or a rookie that could really go in and work against Chase Brown's time and volume. And who do we want to get players from, class? We want to get players from high-scoring offenses. If we can help it, we want it. High scoring offenses, and Chase Brown fits that bill. So let's move on to someone who may not fit that bill, but we still want to talk about here. And that is DeAndre Swift. So let's give a little love to Swift because I feel like he's another guy. We're talking about a lot of guys who, like, right now at least, are kind of polarizing. They have a broad range of outcomes and positions in the community.
And again, that's part of the reason why I chose him as my player profile. There are some of these offenses, it's really easy to find players that either they're popular, right, in fantasy football, they're big names, like a guy like Malik Nabers. It's easy to do something on him because everyone talks about him, right? There's a lot of things in a short, again, we're talking about very short sample size with him, but now we're looking at a totally different guy, right? DeAndre Swift, he might be, again, going back to our previous podcast, we talked about the zero running back build. We talked about this hero running back build. When you get to the point where you're looking at where DeAndre Swift, it doesn't matter. Either of those builds are going to work for this. He can be a guy who comes up and surprises people because just like the running back we just talked about, he has this ability to not just work on the ground. He's a pass catcher.
He
This
is.
year, he gets Ben Johnson as his head coach. There are a lot of question marks in that offense, mostly through Caleb Williams in the passing game. But the fact that Swift is still being viewed within that organization as the RB1, now he's reunited with a guy who, when they were in Detroit together, he averaged 52 receptions on 68 targets per year. 76% catch rate. If I know that I'm getting 52 receptions a year, that's fantasy points, man. And again, some of the other running backs who are going in that same area of a draft for ADP, they're not giving you that same upside, right? He might have a similar floor as some of those other options, but again, you're talking about a guy who last year was, I mean, pretty quietly RB19. So he was still an RB2 last season
Yes.
without Ben Johnson and without we'll use the phrase revamped offense again. Had 1,345 yards overall,
Total.
right? On the ground and in the air, and had six total touchdowns, 42 receptions. Is that repeatable? More than likely, if he gets the same amount of volume or more, he's going to turn that up, right? And again, with a 76% catch rate, if he gets kind of the targets that he was getting, which is another, on average, another dozen, maybe more, 15 targets at minimum, those are points in the bank every time.
Yeah. And there's this narrative that's kind of hanging around about him, and I just want to squash that right now. For some reason, the injury narrative still follows him, and that should not be following him, folks. Let's just set the record straight on that. Some of you might be saying, well, I hadn't heard that. And some of you might be saying, well, yeah, I feel that way because I've heard it out there. In the first 3 seasons of his career, yes, he missed some games. 13 games, 13 games, and 14 games. In 2023, he played 16 games. And in 2024, he played all 17 and started all 17. So I think it's pretty safe to say that if we could cut the injury bug nonsense out about anyone, we could do it about him. And not only did he play the most games he's ever played last year, but he also got the most carries that he's gotten in his career last year. This is a guy who, if you look at his statistics, is on the rise. 253 carries versus 229 in 2023. Yes, he did more with those carries in 2023. He got 1,049 yards. He was up over 1,000. But 959 yards rushing is no joke. That's not something to overlook. And especially if we put him at value. And now I want the light bulbs to start going on, right? We have a guy getting the ball 253 times, not counting his 40 some receptions, running for 959 yards, and you can get him at a fool's value right now in drafts. Look at the other guys around him. You decide if you'd rather go a different direction. I have no problem drafting Swift this year at value. So, all right, so that's a little bit about Swift, and now we can move on to another running back, James Conner. Let's go into a little bit about him.
James Conner, not an exciting player, right? And this has been
No.
years and years that we've been saying this, Rick. Like, James Conner is not what they consider the phrase would be a sexy pick in fantasy football by any means, but I'll say
Man, he's
what,
consistent.
man gets it done, right?
Yeah.
Man, he just gets it done. So just thinking about this, since he left Pittsburgh, he's been with the sorry, with the Cardinals now for 4 seasons. So he came over in 2021, played 15 games, had an all-pro season, right? So he played 15 games. In terms of fantasy football production, he was RB5, okay, including total touchdowns 18, which
It's
I didn't even
absurd. I'm
remember.
sitting here literally starting to crack up looking at his touchdown numbers. Like, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, man had. And again, I'm going to reference this again, so I want people to listen real careful to just the numbers. He had 255.7 fantasy points total for that year, including all the touchdowns, 18 touchdowns. You get 6 points per touchdown, RB5, right? 2022 and 2023, he was a little bit less available. He played 13 games in both of those seasons, dropped from 255 points to about 200. So 199 points actually in 2022, 201 points in 2023, had 8 touchdowns followed by 9 touchdowns. And again, when you do all that math, he was RB19 and 18, making him an RB2. If I know that I'm getting James Conner in the sixth or seventh round in 2025 with a floor of what he did in 22, 23, and 13 games, because I'm worried about age, I'm worried about injury risk, I'm worried about Benson as RB2 in that offense, I still feel really good about what James Conner is going to offer me. We got to keep in mind that not even at the end of last season of 2024, but towards the back end, he signed a $19 million 2-year extension, which gets him through the end of 2026. So, thinking about 2025 here, knowing I have an RB2 with RB1 upside, thinking about last year, the reason why they paid him, he actually played 16 games. He had 254.6 fantasy points. So he had relatively the same number of points as what he had in 2021. This time he only had half of those touchdowns. So again, 2021, 255 points, 18 touchdowns. That's a lot of touchdown points. RB5. The world has changed a little bit with all these pass catching backs. In 2024, had relatively the same number of points, half the touchdowns. He ended up as RB11. So he's still an RB1. He's not one of the top end RBs that you're going to be thinking about as, hey, that's my RB1. But if I can get James Conner in the sixth round, maybe the seventh round, depending on how many pass catchers are going this year, and I know that I'm sticking him in as my RB2 more than likely, or a flex, and I'm getting possible back end RB1 upside, I'm going to hit it every day.
And the odds are you are going to get somewhere in RB2 territory, even if you split the difference between his 782 yards in 2021 and his 1,040 yards in 2023. And I should mention 2024, 1,094 yards. But we were just talking about DeAndre Swift. This dude in 2023 did 1,040 yards in 208 carries in 13 games. That was only 2 years ago. Last year, he played 16 games. He only carries it a little bit more with 236 carries, and he's doing 1,094 yards. This guy gets it done. He does. And I don't expect him to stop this year. I don't think he's falling off a cliff. So, even if you split the difference between bad and good, you're still getting pretty good production.
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of talk right now about Trey Benson and him performing well in camp and people talking about our, 1A, 1B in that backfield. Again, that we're in training camp, right? We're talking preseason games right now. When the lights come on and it's time to go and I'm Arizona's head coach, that team needs wins and they need to have somebody that they know that they can rely on who's proven. Yeah, maybe he's not going to play 15, 16 games this year, but he's definitely going to give you all of what he's got until he can't. So that volume is it's special, and being a powerful back like that, running and cutting and taking people out, I love it.
And when someone says more touches, right? Like that's what James Conner said too, was something about, Trey Benson's going to get more touches. He's passing the torch, I think, and that's pretty clear, but he's not doing it this year. And even the words he said about Trey Benson is kind of passing the torch-ish, right? Like, well, he's going to step up more, he's going to be doing more. I think that at the end of the day, Conner's 29 years old. He knows where he's at in his career and what he's done and accomplished and where he's going. And he understands that in the next year or two, then Benson's going to start picking up more, which is great for our dynasty players, right? But right now, I'm still taking Connor. Benson's not a bad pick later where he's going, but I'm still taking Connor. And that's important to note. So now let's go into the last running back we were kind of going to talk about. And this isn't someone who's very controversial. This is just someone who's unknown because he's kind of a rookie. Well, he's not kind of a rookie. He is a rookie. So he is kind of unknown, as in we know a little bit about him from college. We know his pedigree. We know the offense he's stepping into. And that's Omarion Hampton. So let's talk about him real quick.
I tried to do some player profiles purposely with some rookies. So if you go on X, you're gonna see McMillan on there. You're gonna see Igbuka on there. You're gonna see Scattaboo on there. Omarion Hampton. When I looked at that offense, this was obviously pre Keenan Allen returning to the team. He was one of the only exciting guys outside of Ladd McConkey that I said I need to know more about him. Right. And unlike a lot of these other players that I'm talking about today, these rookies, it's different pulling that data. Right. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate to the NFL. But again, not so much the stats themselves, but the usage. What is the usage and what is the production? And again, can that be repeated? Can that be improved on? Is there a trend that's happening here? There are a lot of things to like about Omarion Hampton. he didn't start as his freshman year as the lead back for UNC, but the last two seasons, and I only pulled data from the last two seasons. If you take his 2 year averages when he was the lead back, because he took over as a sophomore, it looks like this: an average of 267 carries, 1,582 yards, 15 touchdowns on the ground, and every single time he carries the ball, his average is 5.9.
College
Now,
different than
again,
pro
you're talking
football.
UNC, AFC college football, you're not talking the same type of speed as NFL, but if I can get 80% of that in the NFL, stats-wise, where you're looking at Hampton, it's awesome. Now I'm going to give you what he did as a receiver for 2 years on average, right? And so he had, on average, 34 receptions both years, 298 yards in addition to 1,582 on the ground. So now you're looking at close to 2,000 yards a year for 2 years in a row. And he had three touchdowns in those 2 years, right? So again, fantasy football, pass catching running back, that guy can block. We don't really know what's happening other than him in that backfield at this point, right? Najee Harris is coming in, but with the in the weird injury thing that he's had,
We have no idea. No idea.
he's not gonna be the first look. But when you think about the Chargers, you think about Harbaugh being a running guy, you think about Roman as offensive coordinator, they went and they picked him, right? That's the other thing with rookies is like, what is the draft capital? So we talk about guys like Connor who have been proven and in the league, and you go, hey, we're gonna follow the money here, right? And when in doubt, you just say, if we pay him, we're gonna use him. That's why I'm big on guys like Chuba Hubbard. They just paid him. Hampton on the other side, again, what is the draft stock? Everyone's big and they're ready for Genty to take off and do something in Las Vegas.
Hampton should
But
be close behind that.
Who's to say that he can't do just as well or not better?
Maybe
They're
better.
going to run the
There's
ball a
hope.
lot more with the Chargers than they probably will with the Raiders.
That's, not bad points at all. And I think that he's one of those rookies that there are different kind of categories of rookies for me. And there's some rookies that I put in the category of, man, they really excite me. And Omarion Hampton is a rookie that really excites me because he is in a spot for it. You mentioned why. I mean, the head coach, the offensive coordinator, those are guys who love pounding the rock, right? They love it. And yeah, sure, you have guys there too, but every team has guys there too. It's about who gets the ball, and it's about who they invest in to get the ball, like you said. And I love Hampton's spot. I love his spot. I think that it's a great draft pick to take him. And especially because you don't have to pay Giante draft capital to get him, I think that he's just a solid pick this year. And we'll see.
Chargers could have gotten Henderson, right? And they chose they so again, you're looking at first round pick, you're looking at the guy that they said, hey, no, this is we are very intentional about what we're trying to do here. I'm excited to see what he's about.
So the last position that we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about a couple guys, is wide receiver. And we'll start with a guy that you had mentioned, and that is Amika Egbuka, who is another rookie we can talk about who is very interesting because of the situation there in Tampa Bay and the camp hype, right? So take it away, Tim, on Egbuka.
Yeah, so I love PPR leagues, and personally, when I'm building a team and I'm trying to compete, and I'm going through my process even after a draft, and I do a lot of trading, and I think you're gonna probably all get bored and tired of hearing me talk about let's trade, let's trade, let's trade, because that's kind of my calling card. But when I'm thinking about what's gonna give me the strongest playoff competitor, I know that with the number of positions that you have on your roster, you're going to fill three, maybe four with pass catchers, right? And wide receivers specifically. So, in most standard leagues, you're getting wide receiver flex. Sometimes you're going to have three wide receivers. I really think that this is one of those situations in Tampa Bay where, again, as a rookie, the only stats that I can pull are from college. It's apples and oranges, but I mean these oranges are pretty good over here, right? Because when we think about what he was able to do in Ohio State, and you're talking about this is a university that Maybe it might not be LSU, but they're not far behind when they're talking about the different prospects and how they end up performing in the NFL. So, a guy from Ohio State, he set the school career catch record last year, right? So, overall for his career, 60 games, 205 receptions. Think about that. 205 catches in 60 games. I mean, he is a target machine. With those 205 receptions, he had 2,868 yards, 24 touchdowns. Played 4 years, right? So he's a seasoned collegiate player. But even when we break that down, 24 divided by 4, you're getting 6 touchdowns a year. And in college, you're playing less games, right? And so you're thinking he's playing anywhere between, well, Ohio State, they're in playoffs a lot, but you're playing anywhere between 13 and 16 games, still less than what the NFL is doing right now. So if we're thinking about what he's able to do there, and you project not the numbers, but the potential, how did he get all that, all those stats in college, right? What are the things that he's going to be able to bring to this offense? And again, this is the other half of it when we're projecting for certain players and the upside that these guys have. Sometimes I've never heard the number of players within an organization just gush and ooze over a rookie as much as what he's been getting this year. I mean, it's going anywhere between your coach to your quarterback to other receivers. I mean, Mike Evans is a surefire Hall of Famer. And if he's sitting here going, hey, this kid's, he's no rookie, right? He doesn't conduct himself like a rookie. He doesn't think like a rookie. Like, he is the real deal, according to Baker Mayfield. So you think about his IQ, the fact that, if you're getting 205 catches in 4 years, you got some pretty strong hands because you're not dropping anything, essentially. And you're getting the ball in all sorts of different parts of your route tree. So being able to move him anywhere interchangeably with a guy like Godwin when he's ready to go, it's pretty clear that they went and drafted him. Jaden McMillan's, he's a good player, but he's not Igbuka. So I can easily see three receiver sets. And if he's in two receiver sets, especially right now at the beginning of the season, we don't know what's going on with Godwin. He's getting long in the tooth. We can hope, and we're probably assuming that Evans is going to get his 1,000 yards again this year. But aside from that, I mean, we don't know what to really expect from this offense without the same offensive coordinator. So the fact that everyone in camp, everyone in the organization, top down, are really, really high on this guy, lights up.
Yeah. So when we talk about, are we buying or fading the noise? I think what we're saying here is we're buying the noise on Egbuka this year. And I think that there's a lot of reason to do that. And you mentioned Baker Mayfield. I mean, when the guy who's literally throwing the ball to you is raving about you, yeah, you could say, oh, that's just the team being rah-rah for the rookie. But I don't know. Baker doesn't seem like a rah-rah for the rookie kind of guy. He's more a tell it like it is and gussy it up kind of guy. He will gussy it up, but he does spit it pretty straight. So,
I think the other thing to think about is not just the fact that they're doing it, but like if we listen real careful, what are they saying about him, right? And again, they're talking about things like yards after catch. The fact that when he catches the ball, unlike what a lot of young guys are doing, which is like their feet are not ready to continue moving, like they said, he's so mentally, emotionally advanced for what to do with the ball once he touches it. Right, he can high point it, but his lower body's ready to run for some reason. So that's not something that you're seeing from a lot of these young receivers, regardless of the other talent that they have, is connecting it to like what's your football IQ doing at that position? And so the fact that he can be anywhere on the field with the hands that he has, with the smarts that he has, learning again every single day, week in, week out from Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. This is a guy that people should be getting really excited about. I'm only concerned that people are going to start reaching because of the hype.
I love it, and I love that for the rookie. So let's talk about one more rookie. We're going to cut through about three more guys before we say goodbye today. So let's talk about Tet McMillan.
I used to live in North Carolina, and so I've seen a lot of the Panthers football over the years. I'm not exactly a fan, but I've been exposed, right? And so one thing that they haven't had in a long time, and I can't think of anyone more exciting that they've been talking about since Steve Smith. That's a long time. Steve Smith was a baller, but he was a Panther a long time ago. So
I
thinking
still
about,
watch him. He's so good. I
yeah.
watch his clips and just love it. Like
Absolutely. But we look back to last year, right? And we say, well, not a great team, but they had glimpses of real fantasy opportunity, we'll say, right? The last few games, it seemed like Bryce Young was actually kind of getting it together. He was connecting on the long ball. He was able to move around in the pocket. You had Chuba, right? Again, I mentioned it before. They signed him to a deal. He's gonna be working. So they have parts of this offense finally that in ho real life they're hoping that it's gonna make a difference, but it's gonna be more exciting for all of us to be able to say, hey, there's some Panthers here that actually could give you week to week value, week to week production. And they've been waiting for a wide receiver. This is their dude. This is their dude. This man has super major breakout potential right here. They need a weapon through the air. They went and they got him out of Arizona. Last year in Arizona, again, you got to pull the college stats, and again, apples and oranges, but still, stick with me here. 84 receptions, 1,319 yards. He's averaging over 15 yards per catch. So he's going downfield. He's a demon. Also had 8 touchdowns, right? We mentioned before with Egbuka, the number of receptions that he has, 60 games. That's fantastic. Well, he had 84 catches in Arizona. They only played 12 games last year, right? So I don't know if they didn't get a bowl game or if they, I don't know what's going on, but 84 and 12 is quite a bit to the point where I posted it. I did not do any math on this, but when I'm thinking about what is the potential, what is the upside to be had in Carolina, he's clearly stepping in as the one, right? There is no number one option that he needs to take work away from, so to speak.
So
And
yeah,
I think, go ahead.
I think that he's gonna be the guy ultimately.
Yeah, I made a comment on my player profile post saying, in 2025 he could be Nabers 2.0, right? In target share. Think about it. I mean, yet Nabers set an NFL record last year, and they're talking about, hey, the Giants were a bad team, not great quarterback play. You're losing a lot. He had over 100. I think he had 170 or 171 targets. Like, what's to say that Carolina's not going to be last year's Giants? They have the same situation. They have a bad defense that's improving. Well, I won't say that they both have. That's not fair. They have not fantastic defenses in real life football, right? So they're not winning all these games. They have to throw the ball. They're going to give it to one guy who's going to be the most consistent performer, and they drafted him to be that.
So, let's just pull out some names here to back what I was saying about him being one, right? Jalen Coker, Hunter Renfrow, David Moore, Xavier Leggett, Adam Thielen, and Rick Barry and Tim DeCook.
Pretty
Like all
much.
the rest of the names. I mean, he's going to be the one there, and that's going to equate to volume. And think about the fact that because they are a decent team, but not a great team, they're probably going to be playing from behind, which means they're going to be passing a lot. And that looks good. We can get some garbage time numbers. Hey, I am not ashamed of garbage time in fantasy football. I want to put that on the record. Garbage time is garbage for pro football, but for fantasy football, it's not garbage. It is treasure. It is treasure time for me. I'm going to call it treasure time from now on.
I
So,
like that.
yeah.
Game's over when the last buzzer sounds, right? So until it's
Yes.
zeros,
Yes.
it all counts.
If you're down by 24, that one extra touchdown from Tet McMillen isn't going to matter to the Carolina Panthers, but it's going to matter to Rick Barry when he's sitting there in fantasy sweating out a win or a loss. So, all right, moving on. We have a couple more to burn through real quick. And first, we'll go over to a guy I love and have no, there's no secret that I love him. I talk about him all the time. Even before I was talking about football publicly, I was talking about him all the time, and it's Jakobi Meyers. I am a draft Jakobi Meyers guy every single year, including this year. Draft Jakobi Meyers. Tim, why?
Yeah, Jakobi Meyers. I think that real quick, just to go back, the last two guys that we have, you and I have been beating the drum for these guys for a long time this year, right? And going all the way back to looking at the stats from last year, thinking about what is the potential for this year. I did not realize how productive that Myers has been over the last two seasons.
I've
I
been
was
telling you.
unaware, right?
I've
I
been
was
telling you.
unaware.
See, we got you. We got you on the train. I like it.
The reason why is because who else was in with the Raiders up until partway through last year, right? You had
Yeah.
Devontae Adams in there.
Big name. Yep.
And
Sharp guy.
that was all the news, right? So the moment the Adams left the Packers, and then they had that whole, well, is what was going to happen to the quarterback? Are we going to get Brett Favre? All that other stuff. Well, guess what? They quietly also acquired one Jacoby Myers out of New England. And I bet you New England is very, very upset that they let him go, right?
They
Because he's
should
done
be.
nothing but fill the stat sheet since he's been with the Raiders. So you go back to 2023 when he first joined, he had 106 targets, right? So wasn't the wide receiver one, but still got plenty of looks.
True.
71 catches for 807 yards, right? So I'm not going to do the math
Yeah, that was
completely, but
71.
that's about that's over 10, right? That's over 11. So over 11 yards per catch, which means that he's moving. Eight touchdowns last year, increase, right? So everything increased. Once you had Adams leave, he averaged 6.2 receptions per game, 9.3 targets, which was very similar to what they had for Brock Bowers, 75 yards a game. His snap share was at 91%. So this man was on the field. He was essentially the new number one. And by the end of the year, his ending stats, 87 receptions, 1,027 yards, only had four touchdowns. Not a great offense last year, but a lot's changed in the offseason, right? You bring in Geno Smith. You got Pete Carroll. You got a new philosophy. He's still the number one. They went and
Yes.
got with Jack Besh real late. They got some other options. Everyone's real high on Brock Bowers. Why are they high on Brock Bowers at the tight end position, Rick?
Volume.
Volume. Who is the only other guy who's proven the last 2 years to get at least the volume that's going to give us some sort of production? His name's Jacoby Myers. I'm real excited. He's the team's clear number one receiver. He's probably we talk about that 1A, 1B.
Two in
It's
targets on
Bowers.
average. Yeah.
It's him and Bowers, and
Right.
then they're going to run and give the ball to Gentry. He's still going to produce this year.
I love it. I love it. And we're going to close out with another guy we love that you said we've been talking about for a while. And that is Mr. Calvin Ridley. Let's talk about Mr. Ridley.
This I've they use the phrase my guy. This is one of them for
He
me.
is. I know. Yeah. You talk about him a lot. He's on your.
Dude,
Yeah.
it was so crazy because once we started, because again, guys, we're just average guys. We love sports just like you. We do the fantasy sports. This is a hobby for us. We got full-time jobs. But I will say this. The moment that I started putting all of these numbers together in terms of your points per game from 2024, and then I saw what was happening in terms of that offense. I don't watch, not last year, I didn't watch the Tennessee Titans. I didn't watch a single game, I don't think, right? You're talking about Calvin Ridley, who's been, how many teams has he been on now? This is his third team,
Yes,
right?
I think so.
Atlanta,
And I think it's his.
Jacksonville, Tennessee, right? And
Yeah,
we
I.
think
Yeah.
about this also. It's weird because he's a lot older, but he doesn't have the tread,
No,
right?
because of the years that
Age
he
doesn't
ended up
matter for
having.
this receiver. And you look at it since his gambling suspension in 2022, he's been averaging per year 15 games, 70 receptions on 128 targets, 1,015 yards, six touchdowns a year. I can't tell you the quarterbacks he's played with since 2022, but they're probably not
It's not a good
Cam
look.
Ward,
It's not a
right?
great stretch of guys.
In fact, getting Cam Ward at number one, like the one thing I do know, and again, I didn't watch a whole lot of college football. I don't know a lot about Cam Ward, but I do know that he can throw a deep ball. I do know that. I also know that last year, Calvin Ridley led the NFL in unrealized air yards. So what we mean by unrealized air yards, he's running his routes. He's going deep. His quarterback is not proficiently able to get him the ball. And so they add all of those yards up that potentially could have given us fantasy points last year. He was at the top of the list. And he still had over 1,000 yards in the air with some pretty poor quarterback play last year. I
Yep.
think, it's probably changed because I posted about Calvin Ridley back on July 26th, but at that point, when I looked at what was happening in ADP, on Fantasy Pros, which is an area that I like to go to in terms of looking for tiers in player rankings and seeing what all the other analysts are doing. I mean, Calvin Ridley was getting drafted. His ADP was behind Travis Hunter. That is criminal. That is criminal on so many levels. You're talking about a guy who's the number one on, I won't use the word ascending, but I've got to find something that's close to it, offense, right? Has a whole lot more potential than what we've had in the past. Yeah, they're still going to want to run. Yes, they have a decent defense. They're going to go through. Who else is there to catch the ball in Tennessee? It's going to be the Calvin Ridley show this year. I don't know any other way that they're going to be successful. And with that arm that they just drafted, I don't
Yeah,
have any other words.
I hear you. So, just to round it out and make sure we have our facts straight. So he did play with early on. He played with Matt Ryan, right? I was thinking about the teams that he played for. Early on, he played with Matt Ryan, but then he was through Trevor Lawrence and Will Levis and Mason Rudolph. So we're not talking about
Yeah,
a lot
since
of
2022, who's he been
guys.
with? Nobody's.
Yeah, since 2022, yeah, not much. So yeah, Tim, you got anything else to say today before we sign off and kick it out to the world?
Not really. I mean, we're just really super excited to be able to share some of the stuff that we've been doing. We're doing this hobby wise, and all, again, we're just trying to win. Well, I know that Rick and I we're in our home league that's been going on for over 20 years. We're just starting a new league this year with some people actually in the fantasy community. We're really, really excited about that. So a lot of the work that we do is obviously for ourselves to just become better, well-rounded fantasy football enthusiasts. But being able to share some of what we're doing with other people without having to say, hey, you need to do this, you need to do this. We're never going to be those types of people. We're going to give you the data. We're going to give you the facts. We're going to talk about some things that we know. And again, we're just regular guys. But being able to share all this with you, it's really exciting. I can't wait to do it for the season.
Right. Yeah. And we are going to be here. So that's it. That's what we have for you today. We are Points Per Reflection. I am Rick. He is Tim. Catch us at PP Reflection on X. You can check out our podcast. It is playing everywhere major podcasts play right now, which is pretty exciting. This is the second episode. We will talk to you again soon because we have a football season starting and we are excited for that. Take care. Long live fantasy football. We're out.
Draft George Kittle.
Draft him. We're gone.